Sports. Spoken here.
Right now, Adam Hogue, Jared Payton, Mark Carmen.
The Beat is on.
You're 100% right.
This is The Beat on 720 WGN.
Good afternoon. What a day. Great day to go to an Indianapolis Colts football game. Before we get into that, at some point in the show, I just want to make mention that if you ever do go to a sporting event early and you have great seats and you're leaving early because you got to go to a wedding or you got some issue that you're not comfortable with, always give away your great seats. You walk to the upper deck. Normally there's escalators. Get the guy in the last row and you say, hey, I got some sweet ducats right down there on the 50-yard line. I got to go. You hand him the ducks and then the dude. You know, you could pick out somebody that you resonate with, right?
Yeah, why not?
Why not? That's my that. Piece of advice on that. All right, the Cubs game will be discussed on this show at length. You're Adam Hogue. You're Jared Payton. I'm Mark Carmen. Hi.
Hi, guys. Ooh. Good to be in here. Not in here a lot during football season.
Monday night football tomorrow.
And there's that Mitchell Trubisky thing, yes.
There's a lot to get to in the next 3 hours.
We have a very short period of time to discuss a lot of things. And I thought it was great to see the Wisconsin Badgers, your Wisconsin Badgers, your alma mater, Adam Hogue. Thank you, I could speak. Get a win against Nebraska, but I heard you had a rough night last night. Very rough night for Hoagie, and it's important that we discuss these things. The big issues are discussed on this show. Why don't you tell everybody what happened to you?
Well, it wasn't just me. It was other... Okay, so everyone knows that one of the coolest parts about Chicago, to me, is that... And I know they do this everywhere, but you can go all around Chicago on a Saturday, and... Iowa Hawkeye bar over there, Wisconsin Badger bar over there, Sparty's over there. It's like...
Go Blue, Buckeye.
Everywhere. And on Sunday, it's the same thing. You got a Steelers bar over here, a Colts bar over here, you know, whatever it is.
KU bar over there.
And yeah. The whole point of these bars are because not everyone in this city grew up here. Not everyone in this city is a Bears fan or... A Cubs fan, believe it or not. Believe it or not. And especially when it comes to colleges, we all know it's a giant melting pot.
We're a divided nation.
Okay? So, Wisconsin's playing Nebraska last night.
Let's get try to keep getting them out there. Go ahead.
Yeah, we'll get there. But I go to a Wisconsin bar to watch. I met my sister there. I met my dad there. Had a little family evening.
Oh,
trying to watch
bonding time.
Trying to watch the Wisconsin-Nebraska game. Get there. Cubs game's in the seventh inning. They refused to put the Badger game on more than two TVs, and they would not put the sound on until the Cubs game was over.
So you're in the Badger bar. You going to give the name of the Badger bar?
Yeah, sure. It's Countryside in Des Plaines.
Okay, you're at Countryside in Des Plaines.
Yeah. Which, by the way, is a great place. I've been there a bunch of times.
Right. Okay. So you're Countryside. Yeah. We got how many TVs in Countryside? What
I don't
50 TVs?
Something. Maybe, I don't know if it's 50, but it's a lot of TVs. Anywhere you are, there's like six that you can see.
Okay. And so only two is Wisconsin.
Two in the area I'm in.
Okay.
Yeah, which is a decent-sized room.
Okay. So they're on maybe, what?
10 two out of 10 of the TVs.
20% of the screens got the Badgers. But they got the Cubs game sound on.
Yes. And they would not change it until the Cubs game ended.
Yeah.
And I told them, I go, then you're not a Badger bar.
And what did they say?
They said, well, I mean, we respect your opinion, but we have, I mean, that wasn't the exact wording, but we have a ton of Cubs fans in here that want to watch the Cubs game.
Right.
And I go, fine, but then you can't spend your entire week advertising on Facebook that you have specials for the Badger game and you're trying to draw in. Because I would not have come here had I known that the Cubs game would be on 8 out of the 10 TVs I can see.
Well, this is double rough for you as a White Sox fan. Go ahead.
I just want to give a big shout-out to Flagship Tavern, because that's the Miami bar. And I was there yesterday with all of my compadres and all of my family from that graduated from Miami, and we watched the game. And as the Cubs game came on, I asked the guy, Steve, who owns the place, I said, please, is there any way we can turn – maybe the Cubs game on one of these big TVs? He looked at me and says, no way. You're going to have to, because we're Miami sound, Miami game through the game, and then I'll have those on the little tiny TVs.
Side TVs.
Yeah.
I'm pro side TV.
But it was...
Put the Cubs game on the side TV. I got no problem with that.
But you, if you're going to be a Wisconsin bar, you need to have the Wisconsin sound on. So that's why people were there.
312-981-7200. Are you with Hoag? Should the Badger bar have had Badger sound? Or do the Cubs in the playoffs trump Wisconsin?
No.
No.
Not at that bar.
That's the whole point of the bar. You can't advertise yourself one way.
But you have more people in that bar who actually want to watch the Cubs. Tough position for the bar.
No, that's not.
I would say
it
by kickoff, though. And by the way, this isn't like, yeah, I'm sure the Miami place was full, like 95%.
It was full, Miami.
And this one's out in Des Plaines, a little bit farther out. It was probably 50-50.
Okay, you got a 5-0-5-0. You've got game two of the NLDS, clearly a bigger game than Wisconsin.
Oh, no question. I'm not trying to argue that.
Right.
I'm not trying to argue that.
No, I didn't think you would. I was just stating facts here. And you are a Badger bar. You are advertising on Facebook. This is a tough spot in my mind.
By the Alumni Association. Yeah. This was their pick of the week.
That's the other thing. This was the Wisconsin Alumni Association Badger Bar of the Week. So they rotate out. There's like 10 of them in the city.
Ooh.
And they went, so the Alumni Association, I talked to them too, and they were on my side. They were like, yeah, we're trying to talk to the owners, and there's three different rooms. You can at least set aside one of the rooms
and
put the sound on in that room.
Will you ever return to this establishment?
Yes, he will. He'll be there. Yes, come on.
A lot of hesitation.
I don't know. Yes, I will, because I like the place. I don't know that I'll go there for a Badger game anymore.
Ooh.
Can you say hi to all the people that are watching?
You want to say hi to the peeps?
Yeah, I just want to say hello.
There. Okay.
Hi, guys.
What's up, peeps? Big crowd of youth out there.
Yep.
Where are y'all coming from?
Wheaton, Illinois.
Go Wheaton.
Yes.
All right. I mean, we got like 25 kids outside that are all about, 12, 13 years old? 15, okay.
21.
Thanks, team.
Bye.
Good choice on the baked lays. Very good choice on the baked lays. Way to, JP, I knew.
How did you know I saw that?
I knew you respect the baked lays.
I love the baked lays.
Always keep it healthy with the baked lays. There you go. Good job.
Some of the kids got suckers in their hands. Look at that.
A lot of sugar over there.
Hey.
Happy birthday.
Whose birthday is it? No, we need a name. All right, Cameron. Happy birthday, Cameron. All right, that's, I mean, what?
You got to do that for the people.
Hey, we're here.
Hey, we're all about love.
We love that. Have a great day.
Yeah.
630 texting a Cubs fan here. Badger bar, Badger sound.
Badger bar, Badger sound.
Badger bar, Badger sound. They went against the grain, man.
And here's the other thing. It got worse.
Uh-oh.
Cubs game over. They do put the Badger sound on.
Yeah.
6 out of the 10 TVs I could see, then flip to the Blackhawks game.
Okay. You want like a 9 out of 10 one Hawk?
I'm like, again, yeah, Hawk, side TV.
Hawk.
I'm perfectly okay with that. It was on the bigger screens. Yeah. So there's like two TVs next to each other, one smaller, one's bigger. Hawk's bigger screen. You're not a Badger bar. Sorry.
Everything he keeps saying, it just shows more and more they're not.
They're not a Badger bar.
They might not be cut up for it.
What's the best Badger bar?
Will's on Racine.
Yeah.
Okay.
That place. And then, and guess what? That's a real Wisconsin bar. You go there on a Sunday during a Bears game.
Yeah.
Packers.
Dan Long's eyes just lit up. Feel like he spent some time at Will's. got super excited. They got bourbon at the Will's for Danny Long. Hey, make Sunday's your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's best at 10 p.m. and stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV. Chip Carey, who, of course, used to call Cubs games right here in town. Now the voice of the Atlanta Braves will be with us at 3:35. We'll discuss game two coming on back here, 720 WGN. Right. 720 WGN. Your home for True Blue Cubs playoff baseball talk after every Cub game. We'll be with you tomorrow night after the Blackhawks game. Blackhawks 2-0 looking solid. All right, so
what's the schedule tomorrow night with you got?
Oh, we got a whole thing tomorrow.
You got
night.
We got it. We're juggling Hawks, Bears, and Cubs right here on 720 WGN because that's what we do.
This is what's going to happen. We're going to have a little special 10 to 10:30. while the Bears are still going on a little Cub talk.
Got it.
And then we're going to do Hamp, OB, and Cos from 10:30 to midnight. You will be joining.
Yep.
From Soldier Field. Okay. And then Patty's going to do her show at midnight. I'm going to stick around and talk a little more Cubs with Patty. That's the plan for tomorrow night.
Wow.
So.
And you got Hawks on WGN Radio.
Hawks on WGN.
And you got the Bears game is going to be on WGN TV tomorrow.
That's yes. huge.
I'll be,
how about that?
What I'll be doing pregame.
What's your role?
Doing pregame with Lauren Majere.
That's huge.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm going to photobomb you guys.
Big deal, man. I'm excited.
Bears winning tomorrow?
We'll talk about that.
Okay. All right. We'll get there in a second. So last night, I'm going to let the microphone drop and myself drop right now. Last night, the Cubs were up 3-1 in the eighth inning. They were five outs away from being up 2-0. The Nationals had zero confidence. The Nationals were pressing. And Joe Maddon called on Carl Edwards Jr., who was phenomenal in game one and has been phenomenal for the most part all season long. And he's still a young guy, and I think he's still getting used to being that quote-unquote eighth inning guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he hung a curveball that any one of us would have hit for a base hit. Bryce Harper hit it to the moon. So I don't think you can blame Joe Maddon. And at the end of the day, the Cubs bullpen is something that's we knew was going to be an issue coming in, and it reared its head last night. That's how I see it.
I mean, he his numbers are good against lefties, and he hung a curveball to the most right. dangerous player on the Nationals that you could have done that to.
Yeah.
And it got crushed. I don't know how you put that on a manager.
It's hard because to me it doesn't matter. I mean, Bryce hits righties or lefties. I mean, righties a little bit better, but he hits both. So it is what it is. You hang it out there. You might just crush a single. I know I'm getting a double. Sorry.
Look, Dusty made actual managerial errors in game one.
So
okay. Joe did not do that last night. And we'll call Joe out. I was all over him for the playoffs last year in game six and game seven. But yesterday, no.
Right. I agree.
I just have an issue yesterday.
No problem with
that. I was shopping down here downtown and went to go get some articles of clothing that I left aside. When I got there back to Nordstrom's to pick everything up, two guys that were in there were all upset. Like, I'm like, what? They were saying that Joe Maddon doesn't get enough. These are older men. That Joe Maddon doesn't get – everything is free for him, free ride for him. He doesn't get – I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. He gets criticized more than anybody else or any other coach in this city. What are you talking about? I think they were still upset. These guys were upset about Dusty Baker. They want the Nats to beat the Cubs because they don't like how the whole Dusty sand. Things are just so different. But I feel like Joe gets a lot of grief.
If the Cubs had blown it last year, the city would have been calling for Maddon to get fired. He still got a ton. And they won, by the way, the World Series for the first time in 108 years. So
We had that conversation earlier in the year. What if they lose game seven and then they started this season? People forget how ugly it was at the beginning of this season.
It's true.
And if that was all going on into June, absolutely there would have been people calling for Joe Maddon to get fired, which is crazy when you really think about it. But
he's the best manager the Cubs have ever had, mm-hmm. and that's also not exactly the list of the greatest managers in the history of baseball.
How dare you say such a thing and just disrespect Mike Quadi like that.
And Lou Piniella, and even Dusty. And I like Dusty as a guy, I like him as a rah-rah regular season manager in the playoffs, but no. I thought,
is Jim Riggleman still on the Nationals coaching staff?
Jim Riggleman is with the Reds now.
Oh, okay.
Jim Riggleman's had one long career. How'd you get to Jim Riggleman? Oh, because of all Cubs managers.
I was just thinking about Cubs managers.
Jim Essien, Frank Lucchesi, Gene Michael recently just passed away, Jim Fry. Okay, we don't need to name all the Cubs managers. I think it's a huge, I don't know if the word is issue or concern, but you're asking now a young guy in Carl Edwards Jr. who was on the mound in Game 7 in the 10th inning last year before giving way to Mike Montgomery, where Joe Maddon was not comfortable with him finishing the inning. Can you bounce back from losing a playoff game, come back out, and face a very potent Nationals lineup with a ton of pressure on your shoulders? Because they're not going to go to anyone else. Maddon is defiant. This is the guy.
Well, who else are they going to go to?
Right, they don't have anyone else.
Right.
So can he do it?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I would trust his talent, and I would trust him not to throw such a bad pitch again. I mean, I know that sounds simple, but it wasn't a good pitch. Though. You can't do that with Bryce Harper. That ball needs to be in the dirt. Needs to be buried in the dirt.
Bryce Harper said that I was planning on taking the pitch no matter what, and then I saw this thing coming at me, basically.
Yeah, you saw a beach ball, you know, just coming straight his way, and he had that much time to think about it.
And
he killed it.
Goodness.
But why is the conversation not really about Mike Montgomery? I mean, the game was tied still.
I agree. I mean, he's certainly part of the conversation, Montgomery.
And by the way, these are the two guys that finished off game seven for you. How soon we forget that?
That's true, too.
I understand it's a new year and you still have to perform, but, like, let's give these guys a break. It's one game.
It's hard.
All right? It's one game.
Right, but now you have to beat them in 3 and 4. Otherwise, you are going back to D.C. in the short series, game five, and you're dealing.
I didn't think it was going to be that easy. So I thought it was going to be a little bit difficult for them to get through this series.
The one thing I will say is that the Nationals have had like this, I don't know what the right word is, monkey on the shoulder, whatever cliche you want to use. They've struggled to get out of the first round of the playoffs. Right. And I do think there's added pressure on them in this series, certainly more than what the Cubs are dealing with. And so you finished them off yesterday, and they're down 0-2.
Yeah,
and they got to go back to Wrigley. I'm not saying they couldn't come back. We've seen that happen plenty of times over the years. But it's not looking good for that franchise with what they're doing, the criticism that Dusty was already facing after what happened in Game 1. That had been a tough spot. So by blowing the game yesterday, you certainly lifted the confidence level of a team that needed confidence badly and now has that. But they're still coming back here, and you're the more experienced team in the postseason. You got a great manager who's going to be able to flip the attitude. And actually, the reports in the locker room yesterday were pretty positive, everyone was fine.
They all said nice things. Yeah. However, like reading the Nationals quotes, like Ryan's, we didn't, you know, just to be honest with you, didn't want to acknowledge it, but it was getting pretty tense in our dugout. The pressure was mounting.
Yeah, it's on them.
That reminds me. Did you see the Nationals tweet?
No, what was it?
They tweeted out, and this is I will say the Nationals went from confident to cocky really quickly. And I understand this is like probably just some social media guy and not really anyone.
Well, they backed it up with the way Harper's talking. That's what we needed. Da-da-da-da. Got a mojo back. Now we got Scherzer. Let's roll. The whole thing. I mean, that's fine. They should be confident. They should believe in themselves. That's why they're on that stage. But it's just painful that you had them down in a corner and borderline crushed.
The tweet: Cubs blew a 3-1 lead with a gif of Bryce Harper just winking at the camera.
I just saw it.
No, let's get that straight over to Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant and
company. And by the way, the Cubs have the best social media team in this entire town in terms of professional teams. They just tweeted back a gif of Rizzo and Bryant just staring at them, like into the camera.
Social media war, baby.
I love that.
Let's go.
It's a great response.
You got to.
But my point here is, all of a sudden you win one game and you're this confident Nationals team. And didn't Bryce Harper say the train is coming?
That's what he said.
I mean, he got really. You understand what I'm saying? They went from like, we can't win a playoff game to, oh, all of a sudden we're really cocky because we won one game against the defending World Series champions.
It's mind games. It's all about mind games, man.
Okay, let's go. Before we move on to Chip Carey and talk more baseball, one more thought on John Lester pitched well last night. I want that just to be said. I was worried about him. He looked good. His reaction in the fifth, getting Trey Turner, that was sweet. So that is a point of confidence moving forward. And who knows if this thing goes five, maybe he's in that game along with Kyle Hendricks if need be. You never know how that's going to go because they'll both have the requisite amount of days of rest where they could both pitch on Thursday if we get there, which I would say most likely that's how it's going to go, right?
I feel great about Quintana in game three. That's all I know. Let's go.
I feel nervous.
Quintana.
I feel very nervous. Chip Carey coming up next, 720 WGN.
That was the only option. That was the right option. CJ was the right man for the job. He hung a curveball. The guy didn't miss it. Harper's good. CJ is really good. CJ numbers against left-handed hitters are among the best in all of baseball. To say that I did not say anything in a derogatory manner towards CJ would say I don't have confidence in him. I have all the confidence in the world in him. If that happens again, you're going to see CJ back out there. He made a bad pitch, and the guy didn't miss it. and that's it.
There you go.
It. Simple as that.
Joe Maddon, manager of your Chicago Cubs, World Series champion, trying to make that the old two-for-two back-to-back. Chip Carey, former voice of the Chicago Cubs, of course, the voice of the Braves. You hear him on TBS, and now joining us here on 720 WGN. I'm having dinner last night watching the Cubbies at Harry Carey's, and here comes Chip in, and he sits down to the bar. I didn't want to bother you at the bar last night, Chip, so I figured I'd just, you know, text you today and ask you to come on the show. So thanks for joining us, and I hope you enjoyed your dinner.
My pleasure. It was great. I had a great time seeing all old friends at Harry's last night. I had fun watching the great game with Grant and Dutchie. Hopefully there'll be a better outcome tomorrow afternoon.
Do you believe in baseball momentum in the postseason, Chip?
I think your momentum is as good as your next starting pitcher. I'm sure that there are emotional ebbs and tides, but in playoff baseball, because of the dramatic nature of short series, because the importance of every out, and because the importance of every base on ball or mistake turning into a rally, and the ebb and flow that comes with that naturally, yeah, there's momentum. But I think it happens and changes so quickly and goes back and forth so quickly that you don't have to worry about a carryover effect or like the outcome of the game last night. The Cubs are going to lose three games in a row any more than the Nationals were going to lose three in a row after the Cubs won game one of the series. So, yeah, there's carryover, there's momentum, but it all stops and starts once the next pitch is thrown, not only by the starting pitcher, but the guys in the bullpen starting a fresh inning.
Well, in the case of both teams tomorrow night, then, at least between the Nationals and Cubs, both teams have pretty good pitchers going, with Scherzer facing Quintana. Yeah. But, I think that the thinking with some franchises certainly have different storylines going on, and in the Nationals' case, they've had a tough time getting out of the first round, and they lose the first two games at home. It seems like, at least when you hear the comments from Bryce Harper and what was going on in that locker room after the game, that they certainly got a boost of confidence that they certainly needed, and, I mean, at least that can't hurt them going forward in this series.
Oh, no question. They're a great team. I mean, the Cubs are a terrific team. One loss in a playoff series, when you need to have three of them to be knocked out, isn't going to affect the psyche of either the Nationals or the Cubs. You might recall the Cubs last year were down in two of their playoff series, one of them including the World Series, and things worked out pretty darn well for them. The same for Washington. What they didn't want to have happen is come into the road portion of the series from a Nationals perspective down 0-2. They did what they had to do. Now they split the series. The Cubs did what they had to do. They won a game. They've taken away home field advantage. Now if they can take care of business the next two days at Wrigley Field, then they win the series and move on, and Washington goes home again. So, as I said, both teams accomplished what they wanted to. Both teams lost in heartbreaking fashion in the first two games of the series. So I think as far as that's concerned, everything's just as even as the series is.
Well, Chip, we talked about momentum and going into game three. I mean, having Max Scherzer on the mound is kind of what all eyes are on for Cubs fans here in Chicago. But what do you expect out of him, even with that hamstring issue that he's been dealing with?
Well, Max Scherzer is one of the great gamers in Major League Baseball. This guy is a big game pitcher. He is a tremendous strikeout pitcher. He is not going to be afraid, if he's healthy, to take the ball and throw 115 or 120 pitches if that's what it takes. We saw him a lot with the Braves. I think the Braves beat him once in four outings. They gave him some trouble because he can, spray the ball around every now and then. But he is a high power, high velocity, high strikeout guy who is going to take the bit and just run. And run as far as he can. The great unknown is, as you said, how's the hamstring? It's the same question the Cubs are going to ask when Jake Arrieta pitches. How's the hamstring? I suggested earlier today, if I'm the Cubs, that's something I try to find out pretty early in the game. I try to bunt, try to make him feel his position. Don't see how that leg feels, and maybe find something out. But I think we'll know pretty clearly from Max Scherzer that, number one, if it's bothering him, you're not going to know it. And number two, you hope that he just has an off day and you can get to him because, like Steven Strasburg, this guy's a legitimate number one, 1A, top of the rotation ace. And to beat the best, you got to beat the best. That's what the Cubs have on their hands tomorrow.
No doubt about it. If you want to follow Chip Carey on Twitter, it's at KAPAYA1234. Can you explain your Twitter handle, Chip? I was doing Google searches. I'm like, what's going on here? If there's something behind it, I'm assuming there is.
No, I mean, it's something that's just kind of goofy that that came up a couple years ago. And there's so many different ways to do Twitter. I think that's just what popped up. It's easy to remember. That's all.
Okay. Well, and
no big story behind it. No.
Okay. I guess I'm not going to get my 60 Minutes promotion. I always thought that I could be on that show, but breaking Chip Carrot.
Yeah.
So I'm going through your tweets today, just seeing how you're kind of digesting the baseball playoffs. And you loved the pitching matchup in Game 1 and watching a guy, as you put it, pitch in both Strasburg and Kyle Hendricks. And it seems to me that you kind of long for the days where you have a guy on the mound who's not just firing at 95, but actually is a little more cerebral, a Greg Maddux type. Can you just talk about how you see the game going, where it's all about power and it's sort of you lose sort of the beauty of baseball in the process?
Well, look, make no mistake, if you have a guy throwing 95 and hitting spots and pitching like Strasburg did the other day, that's pretty darn good, too, and the way John Lester was pitching as well. I think that people who cover the game, talking to scouts and pitching coaches and evaluators all around baseball, the real concern that we have in our sport is that there's such an emphasis on velocity that I think we forget the whole point is for pitchers to get outs. And when we see pitchers going 5 1/3 innings every single start, I mean, the Atlanta Braves this year, I think, had a grand total of 75 or 77 quality starts from their pitchers. That means they had an ERA of 4.50 or better. The other 80-some-odd games, their ERA was higher than 4.50. They averaged 5 2/3 innings pitched as a starting staff for the entire year. And what's happening is guys are coming to the major leagues, throwing as hard as they can, maximum effort on every pitch, and not knowing how to get through a lineup a second many times, or even, God forbid, a third time through the lineup card. And it's forcing managers to make all these pitching changes. It's forcing increased use of bullpens. And a lot of the art of the game is that cat and mouse game between pitcher and hitter that's lost because guys shoot all their bullets in the third or fourth inning of the game. So that's what I did appreciate about what Kyle Hendricks did. He doesn't have to throw 93 miles an hour to get guys out. And I think, as I said, in this era of baseball where everybody's throwing so hard, a guy that has his kind of precision, not to mention his lack of so-called velocity, is really a tough thing for hitters to hit because everybody's used to seeing 95-mile-an-hour fastballs and they just want to go into launch mode with every single swing. So it truly was a great pitching performance by Kyle the other day, and hopefully he'll get another chance to throw another gem like that in this playoff series.
We're talking to Chip Carey here on WGN Radio. And Chip, just hearing what you just were going through in sort of the process of all these pitching changes and the way the game's being played right now kind of is a nice transition to the whole conversation about pace of play. Mm-hmm. My opinion on this has just been, this time of year in October, I really don't care if a game goes 4.5 hours. If it's a great baseball game and all the strategy's going on, yeah, I don't care. But in June, casual fans out there just trying to, get a baseball game in an evening. They got to work the next day. I get it. I get it. So in the context of everything you just brought up and how the game is being played right now, do you think pace of play is an issue?
I do. We live in a Twitter, Facebook, as you said, a Twitter, Facebook society a minute ago. We live in an instant gratification society. Everybody is on their phones constantly seeking information, and they want that information as quickly as they can possibly get it. Because if you don't have that information, in many ways you're being left behind. I believe, in my own opinion, the simplest way to increase pace of game is to call more strikes and to call the strike zone the way that the rule book interprets the strike zone. And hitters aren't going to like that. But the bottom line is we are becoming a three-outcome game, a strikeout, a walk, or a home run. And while the home runs and things are exciting, the ball is not in action enough. You don't get to see the great plays because hitters aren't necessarily swinging the bat. And I've told this story a million times. Bobby Cox's first major league at-bat with the New York Yankees, he took a pitch that was a ball off the plate, and it was called a strike. And he looked back at the home plate umpire, who gave him this very, very terse message. And he said, "It's the major league, son. Swing the bat." And I think if we get the strike zone back to some semblance of normalcy instead of this crazy square that's the size of a coffee can, you're going to see hitters have to swing the bat. You're going to see pitchers more effectively, and they'll be able to pitch, and the pace of game will be improved. That's the simplest way to do it without changing electronic strike zones and all that silliness. let's get the ball in play more. The way to do that is to make the hitter swing the bat. The way to do that is call more strikes.
See, and I completely agree with you, but then baseball wants offense. And if you widen out the strike zone, then you're going to have more swing and misses, and then you're going to have a lot of 2-1 games. Like, that's the other side.
I really don't think that that's going to happen because we have seen more home runs hit Major League Baseball this year than we've ever seen before. We've seen offense rise. The pitcher's almost becoming an endangered species because of the rise in offense. Players are bigger. Players are stronger. Ballparks, in many cases, are getting smaller. I don't think that calling more strikes is going to necessarily lead to lower offense because, you know, guys do get hits and guys do hit home runs. You know, guys do make errors. The whole point of the game is not time of game or even outcome of game. It's the pace of the game, and people want to see the ball in play. I want to see Javi Baez and Addison Russell make great plays up the middle. I want to see Francisco Lindor, take away hits up the middle. I want to see him hit home runs too. But the numbing, mind-numbing ball four, look at the umpire fest that we see during regular season, I think is killing the spirit of the game, and it's something that could be very, very easily remedied, I think.
Do you want the robot ump behind home plate?
No, I don't. Okay. No, I think that I think in many ways we've taken away a lot of what makes baseball baseball. You know, everybody, our sport is great, but it's very reactionary. The Chase Utley leg whip of Ruben Tejada resulted in the slide rule at second base. The Buster Posey collision at the plate against the Marlins resulted in the no collision rule at home plate. No, we don't need that. Let's go back and look at tapes of the Kansas City Royals and the New York Yankees in the playoffs in the 1970s, and watch how Hal McRae slides against Greg Nettles, and watch how Hal McRae slides in against Willie Randolph at second base. You tell me that our sport looks at all like that nowadays. Steve Stone, who's such an influential person in my baseball and my regular life, said, baseball's a tough game played by tough men, and sometimes guys get hurt, but we're turning it into sort of a ballet that doesn't resemble the sport that I think we all fell in love with. It's all antiseptic and replays, and let's make sure we get it right. And I agree, we want to get it right. But in doing so, in my opinion, we're taking so much of the soul away from the game that makes it so enjoyable to watch. And that's kind of frustrating for an old-timer like me.
Hey, Chip, just real quick, it's been an interesting week or so for the Braves down there. A lot of exciting talent in that system. I know a little bit of uncertainty at this point, given the news and the general manager resigning. But what's your outlook for the Braves in this offseason?
Well, I think they're going to be exciting to watch because they do have a tremendous farm system. They've got a lot of young players coming up. As of now, John Hart's going to be the acting GM until they figure out who's going to take over for John Coppolella. His departure was a big surprise to me and a lot of people in Atlanta. Certainly disappointing. This was this man's dream job, and now he doesn't have it. But the future is very bright. They love the new ballpark. Hopefully the Braves will get back to the way that they did business, and that is with outstanding starting pitching. Again, in my opinion, they have terrific young players. They just need some veteran stability on that club, both in the locker room and on the field and on the mound. And if they can do that, I think they have a chance to gradually improve. But looking at the Cubs and looking at the Nationals, it's a wonderful roadmap and blueprint for the Braves to realize how far they have to go, but how good they can be when they get there. And obviously those of us who love the Braves hope that that's sooner rather than later.
Chip, last one. I want to ask you about Sammy, who you called, you saw the whole thing, and he has a real weird relationship, not only with the Cubs, but also with Cub fans. I'm actually somebody who thinks that he should be back at Wrigley Field in some way. Of course, the Cubs' position is that he's got to apologize for whatever he did off the field before that happens. What would you like to see happen there? Does Sammy in your mind need to do an apology before anything happens with the organization?
Well, first of all, I don't work for the Cubs. I don't work for the Cubs organization, and I don't represent Sammy Sosa. So what I think he should do, or what I think the Cubs should do, isn't really doesn't really matter. The bottom line is, yeah, he was a terrific player for a long time and was really the bright shining star for some teams that didn't have much else to watch. But watching him hit the ball was really the entertainment that many people saw at Wrigley Field. What he did off the field or on the field, I think, is well documented. You can't change the fact that the guy was still a tremendous player for the Cubs. And as for me personally, he and I did not always see eye to eye, but by and large, he was always great to my family, and he was always respectful of me. And for that, I'll always be grateful. And I hope that somehow, some way, that if the time is right for him and the Cubs, that they'll find a way to welcome him back to Wrigley Field with open arms, because he did do an awful lot for the franchise, no doubt about it.
Well said, Chip. We appreciate you taking time on a Sunday. Thanks for jumping on WGN. You're awesome.
Okay,
thank you,
guys. Anytime. Enjoy the game tomorrow. We'll see you soon.
All right. Chip Carey joining us on 720 WGN, your former voice of the Cubs, voice of the Braves. I had to ask the Sammy question.
It's all good.
That was awesome talking to Chip.
I love talking to Chip.
And obviously, I grew up a Sox fan in this town, but I mean, would watch the Cubs all the time. And probably for me, the Chip Carey, Steve Stone booth is the one I kind of remember the most vividly from, you know, when I was younger.
There was some exciting seasons in there that Sammy provided.
And I mean, 98 is one of the all-time...
And 03...
Maybe the most... Is 98 like the most famous baseball season ever? Just considering everything that happened and maybe the most impactful on the game?
I would have to say...
That's a fair argument.
I would have to say yes.
I mean, you had not only the home run chase, but at least here in Chicago, the Cubs actually get into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was an exciting year.
It was. 62-66.
I think Chris Snowpeck was playing on the south side.
Wait for me.
That smile Sammy on your
and
face.
Sammy and McGuire hugging in St. Louis when he hit 62 off of Steve Traxel, former neighbor of Harry Tynewitz, just in case he's listening out there.
Hey, Harry.
Quick timeout. So much to do. We got the marathon, which is like my favorite day all year long in the city.
Yeah. Yes. A lot of marathon runners walking by right now.
Yep. Congratulations.
Congrats.
If you ran and you're listening, you're walking by, congratulations. You're awesome. And there's big NFL news today as well. So we'll get to all of it. 720 WGN. Just talking about Jared Payton winning the MVP of the Orange Bowl during the break.
Good times, good times.
Go Canes, go Canes. Huge win yesterday for us.
You were the MVP of the Orange Bowl.
What were you the MVP of, Carm?
What were you the MVP of, Adam?
I was the most improved player 1 year in baseball. I did get that honor. I like that. I mean, you know, I made some strides. I was most improved. Not the most valuable, that's for sure.
I won the free throw shooting contest at Ravinia Grammar School.
I'm cool with that.
And then I took all of Highland Park going 18 to 25. Then I headed to Evanston, and I got a third place trophy, and that was the end. Some great Iowa Hawkeye fans outside the studio. You guys look good. Go Hawks.
That's what I'm talking about.
So,
boo!
We're going to talk Mitchell Trubisky after 4 o'clock. We're going to celebrate a new era in Bears football. Adam O, you've been covering this team since you came out of the womb. Your life is about to change, pal.
Yes. Yeah. I have, this is year 7, and I have seen 0 playoff games.
It's all good.
It's not all good. It's not all good.
And the idea is that Mitch Trubisky will save the franchise. Like, literally, though, he's kind of supposed to save the franchise here.
Yeah. We'll take some predictions, too, coming up after 4. What will Trubisky do in his first game? How many tutties? How many interceptions? How many yards? Closest to the pin will win something.
Did you see that Deshaun Kizer got benched today?
Yeah,
he was terrible.
Yeah.
Did you watch the Browns at all today?
Did you like him?
No. I like to enjoy my Sundays. I did not watch the Browns today.
It was enjoyable. They were in the red zone 17,000 times, and every time was a turnover. There was one that was it was an option left. Kizer's going left, and he like weirdly tries to like shovel it off, and it's fumbled, and the Jets recover. And it was just be happy that we're not watching Browns football. That was worse than the Bears, like by a long shot.
Oh,
actually.
Yeah.
Although I don't know, the snap off of Mike Glennon's knee was that was brown.
We're done with that, okay? That's in the past.
Okay.
I wasn't a Kizer guy this year.
I wasn't a Kizer guy at all.
The Mitchapalooza coming up right after 4, 720 WGN.
The Beat. Lead the league in turnover ratio, which is something we have to avoid. You know, really didn't give us much of a chance in 2 ball games, including our last one. I think it was time, and I think he's ready.
You only get nervous or feel pressure when you're not prepared for the situation or you don't know what you're doing. So my job is just to study the game plan, and once I get in there, just go back to my instincts.
All right. It is here. It is time. We have all fought for it, and we're going to get it. Tomorrow night on the lakefront, after the Cubs beat the Nationals, you're going to see Mitchell Trubisky toe the rubber. Is that what they say?
No.
No.
Different sport.
Get under center?
Under center.
He will
get in the gun.
He will get.
Get it on?
He will get it on.
So
at Soldier Field tomorrow.
The entire Bears team was at Ryan Field yesterday to watch the Wildcats in Penn State.
Not the whole team. Not like
a lot of them were there.
The front office.
Front office, not the team.
The team was practicing at Hell's Hall.
I thought the Kyle Long was there too. Did I hear that wrong?
I did not see Kyle Long there. I'm pretty sure they were practicing during the game. I don't know how he could be there.
Okay. Maybe somebody missaw Kyle Long, who's a very large man. It would be hard to not see that that's Kyle Long.
Because they had practice yesterday.
Okay. So, anyway, the front office was at Ryan Field yesterday. There is a lot of optimism on what's going to happen with Mitchell Trubisky. You're leading that charge there. You didn't think they were going to draft Trubisky, but you liked him a lot before the draft, correct?
Yes. I mean, my only hesitance with Trubisky was he's only played 13 games and, you know, it's still risky, right? It's still risky. But in terms of everything on tape, we went through all this in the spring. The thing I love the most, and I think the Bears love the most, and it's the thing you can't teach. And, like, just for reference, since you brought up Northwestern yesterday, I think this is the thing that Clayton Thorson is struggling with right now. And that is just your instincts and feel for pressure in the pocket. It is something you can't teach. It's you can improve it, but some guys just have a knack for it. Like Aaron Rodgers just has a knack for it. And there were times you go back and watch Mitch's North Carolina tape, and, like, there's a free blitzer from the backside, and he's got his back to him, and it's like, oh God, he's going to get killed. And all of a sudden, he just takes one step up. Like, literally just one quick step up in the pocket. Guy goes right by him, and he's able to deliver a pass. It's something you can't teach, and I think that that's something the Bears are really excited about, where he's going to make mistakes. He's going to, you know, he's going to have an interception here and there, but he's kind of got that it factor.
He does. He has that it factor. It's pretty funny to listen to Dial Loggins talk about last week, or just about how he's not just going to wave the magic wand and things are going to be fixed. There's a lot of things still on this Bears team as a whole. But offensively, I mean, the rookie gives you a better opportunity to win, and he hasn't played a regular season game yet. I mean, just to be able to say that is big. But also, to be able to watch him, like Hogue was saying, he has this ability. I love watching him throw on the run. Over time, I think he'll get better in the pocket, but he does have that feel of when pressure is coming, and he has the ability to not only throw the ball, keep his eyes down the field, which I think he does very well, but he also can move and get you the first down and use his legs, and that's what makes him special. And I think why people get excited is because watching a guy like Aaron Rodgers, he has some of that ability in him that you see. It's a natural ability.
He's got the tools. There's no doubt about it. I like the confidence factor with him. He seems to believe in himself. I think he's going to make plays that we haven't seen from a Bears quarterback in, I don't know, maybe ever. And by the way, 312-981-7200. We will take your Mitchell Palooza predictions. I want how many touchdowns, how many yards, and how many interceptions in game one. Whoever gets the closest on those three, you'll get Lou Malnati's next week. 312-981-7200. How many touchdowns, how many yards, and how many picks?
Can I give you mine?
Sure.
Because I did this, my bold prediction for the podcast this week, Hogan Johns,
okay.
WGNradio.com. My bold prediction was 275.
On the yardage, okay.
On the yardage, two tutties.
Two touchdowns.
And one pick.
One interception. Okay. 312-981-7200. JP?
Don't have mine yet. I got to think about this.
Okay. Okay. You always do.
I don't want to win anything. I just.
You like to think about things. It's
I do.
Good.
I just want
to think. You want to be right. I respect that. Hey, we'll get to you in a second. Mike, Mitchell Palooza, how many? What do you got?
Mitchell Palooza. I got Mitch going, or Mitchell, because that's what his mother said.
It's Mitchell.
You need to call him. All right? It's Mitchell. And he's going 18 for 26 for 212 with two tutties and a pick.
Two tutties and one.
He's gonna have a new nickname come on Tuesday morning. It's going to be Bisky.
What is his nickname?
Find his gravy. It's going to be Bisky and gravy. And we got to find the gravy on this train here.
I like that.
I love it.
Bisky and gravy.
I don't know if it's going to be Shaheen or if it's going to be Cohen. One of these rookies, young.
I was
going to
say, Cohen.
Gravy.
Tariq Cohen's already got like 17 nicknames.
Yeah,
so, and well, no, but I'm saying that, that maybe could be another one of his nicknames. And then Mitch has already got the Mr. Biscuit nickname. Who's Biscuit and Gravy?
I don't think Gravy's on the roster right now. But when he gets here, that's my take.
Or you tell me
we need to
Bellamy
find Gravy.
Can't be Gravy?
I don't think Bellamy's Gravy.
Come on.
I don't think Deontay.
What's your favorite Tariq Cohen nickname? Mine's Chocolate Badger.
I still like the human joystick. Isn't
that's
that
good.
One?
But the chocolate badger thing, it was just because the way he said it was hilarious.
When I was there, yes, it was funny. But I just,
he's like the honey badger.
But dude can get hit in the air and spun around and find his feet. It's only something that you do in video
games. It's been the best story of the year so far. That's going to go by the board when Mitchell Trubisky dominates on Monday night. You got your prediction yet, or you want me to take Jim?
No, go ahead.
All right, 312-981-7200. Jim, welcome to WGN. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. I've got one TD, one pick, 196 yards.
One TD, one pick, 196. Jim, are they going to win the game?
Yes, we are.
Okay, Jim. All right, pal. This is not...
That wasn't a very optimistic
prediction.
Yeah,
thanks, Jim. Appreciate it.
But measured. I like it.
Maybe it's a respect to the Vikings defense, which is a solid group of individuals over there.
Very good.
It's very fast. Going to get pressure, going to cover well. The Bears receivers are not any better.
Bears O-line should be healthier with the 10-day break.
Okay.
And they're all together again. Don't forget that.
That's part of it. Couple more here. John, you're in on the Mitchell Palooza. What do you got?
Yes, two touchdowns.
Uh-huh.
No interceptions.
Uh-huh.
295 yards.
Whoa!
295. Two tutties, zero picks. You want to give a final score just for fun, John?
Yes, I do. It's going to be the Bears, 28-20.
Bears 28-20. All right, two more and we'll take here. 312-981-7200.
Who's getting all the receiving yards, by the way?
I got it.
John laughs that one off.
Someone's got to catch all those yards.
Thanks, John.
Tariq Cohen.
Cohen's going to have like 250.
Jordan Howard. I got mine, Carm.
All right, let's hear it.
All right, 189 through the air.
189.
That's
two
low.
Two touchdowns.
Two tutties.
45 yards on the ground.
Oh,
okay.
Zone read?
And
just scrambling.
One interception. Yeah, I think they're going to run the ball a lot, man. He's going to get some opportunities in the red zone. I don't think he goes crazy because of the receiver. So go ahead.
All right, so we got Hogue's at 275.
That was my bold prediction. I was supposed to be bold. All right?
It's bold.
That's probably best case scenario.
JP,
right?
275 to 189. You both got two touchdowns. You both got one interception.
Alshon Jeffrey ain't walking out of that locker room.
I watched a little Alshon today.
Well, I know because he's probably got some kind of hamstring injury.
312-981-7200. Mitchell Palooza. What will he do in game one as a Chicago Bear? We're giving away Lou Malnati's. What's up, Austin?
What up?
Turn that radio down, Austin. Turn your radio down.
That's what I'm talking about. You got your Iowa Hawkeye fans earlier. I got my Wisconsin people right outside the window.
Go Badgers. There you go. Look at them. A lot of people walking by running the marathon. Once again, congratulations to everybody. Let's try Austin one more time. 312-981-7200. Go ahead, Austin. Austin.
Yo.
Give me your prediction.
Well, I'm thinking the Gravy's already on the team. His name is Cameron Meredith.
He's hurt.
Yeah, but for next year.
Oh, okay.
For next year.
Okay. Right. What, did you go to Illinois State?
Yeah.
There it is.
There it is.
I go to Illinois State right now, and I watch Cameron Meredith.
Uh-huh.
And he's got the hit factor, too.
Okay. This is about Mitchell Trubisky, not about Cameron Meredith right now, Austin. Give me the goods. What do you got for him?
Well, Mitchell Trubisky was the Mr. Ohio football, and now it's time for him to be Mr. Illinois football.
Austin, are you not understanding the game? We need yards, touchdowns, and interceptions.
Carm, you are way too patient. I'm just going to tell you that.
I am.
You are being way too patient right now.
I mean, I'm learning about Austin. Are you following Austin? I don't think you are. Okay, that'll end the patience there.
That's my fault. I just loaded up the phone line so you guys had people to go to.
It's not your fault, Dan.
It's not your fault.
Keep loading them up.
That was Austin's fault.
That was 100%. We're all about personal accountability on the show. When I do a terrible show, I admit it. So that's why whenever I walk out the
door. Kevin Powell needs to get his Illinois State people.
Yeah,
in better order. All right, I'm blaming that on KP.
There's no doubt. Text line is less than optimistic from the 708. One touchdown pass, 125 yards, one pick. Fox is not going to let him throw much. What do you think about that? Will John Fox be a little more aggressive with Mitchell Trubisky than he has been with Mike Glennon? Which, by the way, did include him doing that ridiculous play-action pass and fumble. To start, what was that, the Steeler game? It's all a blur.
No, that was
the Packer game.
Yeah.
I think that this is going to be a very similar game plan. I think the plays will look a little different because of what Trubisky can do versus what Mike Glennon can do with his feet. But in terms of risk factor, I don't think it's going to be any riskier. I don't think all of a sudden they're going to start throwing bombs down the field or anything like that. I think it's going to be a Mike Glennon-like game plan from the risk standpoint. And you hope that just the threat of – Kyle Long said this earlier in the week. Just the threat of Trubisky being on the field makes the Vikings look at it differently and hopefully opens up your running game. There's more to worry about then.
Yeah, there is. I mean, especially if you can consistently and start running the ball effectively, then it adds another dimension to what they can do offensively.
And by the way, if I'm the Vikings, if I'm Mike Zimmer, I'm not changing anything up. I'm coming out the same way the Packers did. I'm loading up against Jordan Howard. I'm loading up against Tariq Cohen, and I'm letting the rookie beat me.
I'm bringing pressure when needed.
Right, and if he beats you, and maybe he will, I think Trubisky could. Then you adjust, but until he does that, I keep hammering the Bears' running game because you saw the Steelers take a different approach and it cost them. Yeah. By the way, the Steelers lost to the Jaguars today.
Let's not talk about it. Shouts out to that Jaguars defense though.
That Jaggy defense is solid.
Good thing this is not college football. The Bears' strength of schedule just went down.
If they had a quarterback, there's a guy out there saying wants to play into the Super Bowl. What's up, Vic? You got your Mitchell Trubisky line.
Yeah, I got it, man. 195, one touchdown, and two turnovers.
Two picks? Come You're going on. Two interceptions, huh? 195,
two interceptions.
Two
interceptions.
Okay.
So you got them losing, right?
Oh, yeah, they're going to lose. No. I didn't know I had a pick. They got to lose, too?
Nah, I was just asking you that.
Oh, yeah, they're going to lose.
It's all right, Vic. Do you live in reality all the time, Vic, or do you ever dream?
I live in reality, man.
All right.
I'm calling you guys up. That's reality, isn't it?
Hey, yeah. We appreciate the phone call, Vic. Don't mistake it. I want to see you dreaming a little bit more in your life. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. All right. We'll see what happens, right?
Yes, that's true.
I got a dreamer for you.
Thanks, Vic.
Brian on the text line. I can't call in. I'm at work. However, my prediction is 315.
All right.
Goodness gracious.
Three touchdowns. No interceptions.
Oh, gosh, this kid, the expectations, the world, Chicago is on his shoulders.
I put down 242, 3-1.
242,
3-1.
3-1.
I feel least comfortable with the three.
So the Bears are scoring 21 points.
I think they put up 24 on the Vikes, yes.
I forget what my prediction, I think it was like 24-20 or something like that. Right. I do have the Bears winning.
It's a game they can win. Sam Bradford looks like he's going to play, though. So that is...
don't matter.
That does not matter.
Doesn't matter.
Matters a little. Come on.
Well, it matters because he's better than Case Keenum.
Right.
Yeah, but both guys are just...
Fine.
Yeah, you can if you can get pressure...
And he's less mobile.
Get to them, he is less mobile.
Actually, I think that helps the Bears. He's less mobile, and he's got a bum knee. Go get him.
Maybe he's not healthy, then that... I would agree. Wood factor. Pro Bear.
Go get him, Leonard.
Our guys, Mike, Jim, John, and Vic, there's not a lot of... The most optimistic is John. 295, two touchdowns, no interceptions. But everybody else is kind of in the middle here. Not expecting a ton, at least in game one, from Mitchell Trubisky. So, for everybody saying that the fans out there are completely unrealistic with Mitchell, as far as the beat on 720 WGN goes on this particular Sunday, I would say it's a very level-headed listenership that actually called the show. Jared Payton's got a sneeze. We're going to take a break. 720 WGN. Baseball playoffs are pretty wild. The Indians coming back from 8-3 down the other night. The Red Sox on the brink today. Astros scored three in the first, and now the Red Sox came back with one in the second, three in the third, and they're all the way in the seventh. 4-3 Boston as they try to stay alive. Cleveland and the Yankees coming up tonight, 6:38. Your first pitch. The Yankees on the brink of being eliminated. And of course, the Cubs tomorrow at 3:08. And we have a gruesome injury from the NFL.
Yeah, I just was, you thought I was sneezing, but Odell Beckham Jr. carted off after a brutal-looking leg injury.
I don't want to see it.
I watched it for a second. I have to turn away.
Yeah, I don't want to see it.
Even playing the sport, I can't just watch them.
That's a huge blow, obviously, for the New York Giants.
Who yeah, I mean, that really changes their season.
They were 0-4. Now they're
0-5. That really changes everything.
Brandon Marshall got taken off on a cart today, too. And did you see that? He went off on a cart after spraining his ankle. I don't know if there's actually a real injury, but it looked to me like he just twisted his ankle, went down, and just...
Paul Pierced it?
I've never seen a guy in the NFL get carted off for how Brandon Marshall got the cart out today.
Maybe they were worried something was broken.
Right. It's possible.
I don't know.
Scores right now in your NFL. The Bengals, I predicted that one, Hogue. They beat the Bills 20-16, so Buffalo's 3-2, Cincinnati's 2-3. The Jets beat the Browns, so the Browns are still winless 0-5. Josh McCown, ladies and gentlemen, is 3-2 with your New York Jets, who were expected to be 0-16. Not that McCown's playing well, but they are somehow winning games.
They played nobody.
They've played a horrendous
schedule.
They beat
the Jaguars.
Jaguars are okay.
They beat the Dolphins, Jaguars, and Browns.
Dolphins came back to win today, beating the Titans 16-10. Jay Cutler was 5-for-11 for a quarterback rating of 14 in the first half with a pick. They were booing the living daylights out of him. He finished 12-of-26 for 92, a touchdown and interception, and Adam Gase said at halftime that there's no thoughts about going to Chad Henne or whoever is whoever.
Matt Moore, I think, is backup.
Marquise Gray got in there? Or Matt Moore, right. Where's Chad Henne?
I don't know where Chad Henne is.
I thought Chad Henne was there, maybe.
I'm not sure.
I thought it was Chad Henne. Okay, regardless.
We'll make sure. We'll see where he's at.
Panthers beat the Lions 27-24.
Henne's in Jacksonville.
Cam Newton 26-33. Yeah. 355 yards, three touchdowns, my bad. Right, Chad Henne over. That was Blake Bortles.
Yes.
Discussion. Colts beat the Niners 26-23. San Francisco with former Bear Brian Hoyer's 0-5. He was 29-46, 353 yards, a couple of touchdowns. And, yeah, those Giants are 0-5. 27-22 Chargers. Eagles rolled. What did Alshon do today? Have you been paying attention to Alshon at all?
Not really.
No, not really.
Yeah, okay. All right.
I mean, I can find out for you.
3-for-31 today. He's targeted four times.
I mean, I think he had one decent game, but I think that's pretty much it.
Well, he's only got two tutties.
Yeah, on the season, Alshon Jeffrey has 17 catches for 215 yards and two touchdowns. I would say that that's not necessarily earning the pay.
Eagles are 4-1, though.
That's true. They are. Hey, we're going to do a little respect for the marathon coming up here after the 4:30 news, 720 WGN.
Back here on the beat, 720 WGN, Adam Hogue, Mark Carman, Jared Payton here with you on a Bears-less Sunday.
Bears.
Because they play tomorrow.
Bears.
And Mitch Trubisky is going to throw for 500 yards.
Bears. Victory.
I have some college football thoughts I wanted to get to.
Cats.
New rankings are out. Penn State up to number 3. Wisconsin at number 7. And Ohio State at number 9. Michigan falling down to 17. I'm just going to do the Big Ten rankings.
And Sparty.
Sparty gets in there at number 21. How about that? A couple things I want to get to from yesterday. Carm, do you have any thoughts on Northwestern? 37-7 loss to Penn State.
31. Let's not give them another 6.
I'm sorry, 31.
Yeah. My thoughts are that it's extremely disappointing. You're playing great teams. I mean, you're talking about two of the top 10 teams in the country the last 2 weeks. However, at the Wisconsin game, you get down 31-10. You have a great comeback. You have the ball with, what, about 90 seconds to go, and Thorson gets sacked in the end zone, safety, game over. But you showed something in that game, and I was hoping that Northwestern was going to build on that momentum yesterday. And the defense played great. But clearly the offense is compromised right now. And I think one part of it that's not being discussed a lot is Justin Jackson is not himself. He's wearing the knee brace. He doesn't have the burst that you're used to seeing from him. And the Cats could use a ton of help on the offensive line. That's the biggest issue. But that guy not being what he's been his entire career also is a factor. And Clayton's got to be better, too. That's my thoughts.
Clayton hasn't progressed this season. And look, it's hard when you're not getting adequate blocking. Your run game is non-existent. That puts a ton of pressure on the quarterback. But there are moments in that game yesterday where he did have time and he missed high. Or a lot of these short throws are too low. And you're not leading your receiver to be able to catch and go. That was like Mike Glennon's problem, too, in the last few weeks. Could not throw a screen pass to save his life.
Ted called it out on the broadcast a bunch yesterday.
Yeah.
That exact point.
It's
the run game, though, what Carm was saying. I mean, just think about how many miles he has.
A lot.
He's got a lot of miles on. And you look at the yardage he's racked up over his time at Northwestern. It's impressive. But
and he's never played with an impressive offensive line. And yet he still racked all that up.
It's tough, man.
So
a lot of football left. But
I'll tell you what, here, I got one recommendation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Matt Elvedi should play more.
You know, it's funny you said that. Like, I got a text yesterday from a diehard Cat fan calling for him.
And here's the reasoning. I think Clayton – I've been high on Clayton Thorson. I think he's an NFL quarterback. And I think he's talented, and it's tough right now. The offense is just stagnant, and everyone – the opposing defenses know what's coming, and it's putting a lot of pressure on him. Elvedi brings a different dimension. When your offensive line is struggling, you're trying to run these zone reads, okay? It's tough to run a zone read. Thorson's mobile. He's immobile in the, like, he has athleticism and can run, but he's not the kind of guy who's going to keep the ball and just gut up the middle for 20 yards. Elvedi has that element to his game. So I'm not saying Elvedi should start. I'm not saying he should take over as the quarterback permanently. I'm just saying I think you got to mix him in more going forward into the offense, bring a change of pace, give opposing defenses something else that they have to worry about. Because right now the blueprint is too easy.
I mean, easy is like almost too complimentary. They don't do much. The passes are, you know, 5 yards square outs with a cornerback draped all over the receiver. And then when you hand the ball off, there's just not a lot of room. I would let the freshman running back give him some boost.
Larkin?
Yes.
He's been playing a lot.
He didn't play much yesterday.
He only had 3 carries yesterday.
So,
well, Justin was as healthy as he had been in weeks.
I get that.
It's still tough, though.
When there were times yesterday where he was in the open field, and you can just see he's lugging that leg. At least that's what it looks like to me.
Doesn't look like he's running his normal. There's one play I saw that got called back, and after the face mask,
yeah,
he just didn't look like himself.
And then it's a dicey thing too. Maybe he's still, you feel like he's your best guy, but here's also a dude that you would think wants to play in the NFL, and if you're putting him out there and he's not 100%, it's a tough spot for everybody involved.
It's hard because you still think he's the guy that helps you win games because he's done it before.
And I'm sure he wants to play and is telling everybody that he's fine. So it's a tough balance right now for the Cats as far as I think. A
couple other college football notes I wanted to get to. JP, nice win for your Canes yesterday.
Thank you.
Over the Seminoles. So right after the game, a bunch of the Hurricane players went over to the logo at midfield and they started like fake shoveling on it and sort of dancing on it. And Mark Richt, there's a video of it. Mark Richt, the head coach of Miami, comes running in there. Get off the logo. Get out of here. Get out of here. Just yelling at his players. Now, JP, you played a different era of Miami football. That would have been nothing in your era.
We did it before the game, though. I mean, that's what happened. My freshman year, we went to Doak Campbell, and never forget, Santana Moss catches the ball right in the middle of the field. It gets Todd Seavers kicks it. He goes all the way back, catches it, and then throws it up, the ball up in the air. And we all rally on him and start jumping up and down going, what, what? And next thing you know, you just see Florida State guys, and it was like a big sandwich. Guys were swinging helmets. everybody's telling me you're a freshman, stay in the back. And I was sitting there going, what have I gotten myself into?
Should have gone to Wisconsin.
I should have went to Wisconsin. This is crazy. It was insane. And just to know what the rivalry means, to be a part of it, it's pretty special. That was a big win for us. But Mark Richt, stand-up guy, Hogue, he is...
He's what that program needs right now.
Exactly what we need, man. He's helping out, and he's bringing back the culture of keeping guys in South Florida. People want to talk about where Miami been. Well, a lot of the guys from South Florida that are really good are going to other schools. If we would keep them all in South Florida, we'd be talking about the same conversations of, you know, Alabama and all that. We have all these guys going different places. We're trying to keep them in South Florida.
I like it when I live in a world where the Canes are kind of just hateable, not doing things the right way.
I like it when they're winning too.
I like it when they're good. I think college football's better if they got a little edge to them, right. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
But I want them winning. I like it when Miami's involved. So, okay, a couple other things. Is Nebraska the most overrated program in college football?
Could be, yes.
Because I don't know why we do this every single year. Every single year it's like, well, they're Nebraska, so they're going to be better. And it's like, no. Mm-mm. That was 20 years ago.
It's not the same.
They're not the same, and it's just gotta stop. I mean, yesterday's Wisconsin Nebraska game, I don't think I've ever been more upset with a 10-0 lead in my life. I was like, this should be 28-0. This team is not good.
Cats play them November 4th in Lincoln. You'll be there, buddy.
I will be there.
You could tell all the Nebraska folk. They're very nice, by the way.
They're very nice. Nebraska nice. I kind of feel bad coming at them right now. I'm not mad at Nebraska. I'm mad at this random expectation that because Nebraska was a really good program for 20 years ago. That somehow means that just because they're Nebraska, they're good. They've been in the Big Ten now. Since, 2011? They've been in the Big Ten West for, what has it been, like 4 or 5 years now at least?
Done what?
And I'm sorry.
There's only one N in the Big Ten, baby. It's right here in Evanston, Illinois.
I like that.
No. I still have respect for Nebraska. Like, to me,
forget the respect. Why are people giving them second chances every single year? Like, okay, it's going to be different this year because of what they did a long time ago. No.
Like, I'm tired of hearing about
the black. You have to earn it, dude.
They got to get rid of the black shirt thing. The black shirt defense,
you got to
stop it. It just looks bad. Every year they're like, oh, the black shirts are coming back.
No.
No. No, they're giving up. They're giving up. Oh, let me find this tweet from yesterday.
Come on.
Go ahead.
Some real Hogue Nebraska hate out of nowhere.
I got chills, man. You got to earn your respect.
Wisconsin's now beaten Nebraska 5 times in a row. 5-game winning streak over Nebraska. In those 5 games, they're averaging 368 rushing yards.
Wow.
And 4.2 touchdowns per game. What black shirt defense are you talking about?
I don't know.
They can't stop the run to save their lives. It's been going on for 5 years.
Cats have been beating them, too.
I know.
Even when they lose, they should have beat them.
I love this.
Right, the Hail Mary game.
Right.
Thanks for bringing that up before we go to Nebraska.
Well, the Cats are going to need that game this year if they're going to get into a legit bowl, or a bowl period for that matter.
All right, one more question for you guys.
Yes,
in your opinion, who's the best team in the Big Ten?
It's either Wisconsin or Penn State.
I would say, after watching Penn State and Nebraska in back-to-back weeks, I'll go with your Badgers, Hogue.
You think they're the best?
I wasn't that wild by Penn State yesterday.
All around team.
What I would say is, let's first of all not forget about Ohio State. I know they got blown out by Oklahoma. There's a ton of talent on that team.
Yeah, they are.
And then they might have the most talent in the...
Yes, okay. I get that. But teams...
Let's look at Penn State versus Wisconsin. By the way, I would say Penn State right now. But I think it's a very close argument. Who's got the better quarterback between Penn State and Wisconsin? Trace McSorley or Alex Hornibrook?
Trace McSorley had a great game yesterday, but the Cats were daring him to throw the whole time.
He also didn't have a great game. The numbers look good. He missed a ton of throws.
And he's done that his entire career.
Yeah. So, I don't think he's that good. I think he's better than Hornibrook, though. So I'll give Penn State the edge like quarterback.
Hornibrook's on the come, though. He's getting better.
Yeah, but right now.
Yeah, pick 6 last night. Oh.
All right, go. Keep going.
That was bad. Okay, this is the fun one. Running back. Every single person in the car right now is like, Saquon Barkley. Yes.
Okay, but
I'll give Saquon the edge.
It's not that far apart, though.
Have you heard of Jonathan Taylor tailback?
I mean,
JTT
runs hard.
He has been insane. Bruce Feldman has him in his top five Heisman candidates. True freshman.
I mean, it's JPS out there. That's what I'm talking about.
If JP had gone to Wisconsin, that's what he would have been doing his freshman year.
I probably would have. No, I just would have been around. They run the ball. You know they're going to run the ball. So, I mean, it's hard, Hogue, just to see what Saquon Barkley is able to do. You see the highlights and how gifted he is. But that's what I love about Wisconsin football. It's old-fashioned. We're going to run it at you. Try to stop us. Yeah. Figure it out. We got a bunch of big boys up here, and we're coming at you.
Barkley's better in more different ways, catching the ball in the backfield. Yes. He's obviously got more experience, all that. Slight edge, Penn State. It's not a huge edge, though. People need to understand that. Wide receiver, kind of a wash, I would say. Tight end, Fumagalli, Gesicki are both pros. Probably a wash there. Offensive line. Probably Wisconsin.
Wisconsin gets the edge there.
Defense.
Wisconsin.
I'd say front seven, definitely Wisconsin. Maybe secondary, you give it to Penn State. I'd say overall Wisconsin. You lay all that out.
Penn State.
Yeah, maybe.
They're scoring defense. Penn State right now at the top.
Their numbers are great. Neither team has really played anybody.
I know, but Wisconsin's right there, third. Scoring offense, though. I mean, Wisconsin is right underneath Ohio State with 40.2 points per game.
Yeah. The point there being, I think if you ask that question, people would jump and say Penn State right away. But when you think about it, it's pretty close. So, anyway.
I don't know.
I can't believe I just don't. So you
might want to say, we're taking running backs. You got to pick the running backs. Okay, you can choose either or. But let's running games. Can we just say that? I probably would take Wisconsin's running game.
Well, I mean, Saquon had -1 rushing yards at halftime. We should have pulled Fitz, by the way, at halftime.
Oh, my God. Can you sustain it? Hells yes.
That was great. And by the way, he wasn't exactly wrong. I know that Barkley ended up putting up, 78 yards in the second half, but most of it came on one run.
153
yard
run, yeah.
You know, 95% of that game, Northwestern did a phenomenal job on Barkley. And really, if you want to take one good thing from that game yesterday, Carm, the defense, as weird as it sounds,
defense is good.
31-7 game, the defense took a step forward. The problem is you just lost Patty Fisher and Guywin Igwebuke for the first half next week.
That hurts.
Because those targeting calls, which were, by the way, good calls. Did you see the one in the Ohio State game?
I didn't.
JP, did you see it?
No.
Maybe we can grab Gus Johnson's call.
Oh, I did see it. No, I did.
It's a great call by Gus Johnson.
Said about barbecuing.
Yeah, he's like, you got barbecue back there and you didn't tell me?
I did see it this morning.
It was great. We got to get that call. But yeah, I love college football and I don't know. It's just good to have a quick college football segment before JP leaves us.
I'm glad we didn't get.
What's on the show tonight?
We didn't get to talk. Never mind.
We didn't get to talk indie cults? Don't worry. We're going to do that right next before you get out of here.
Oh, gosh. I got to go.
720 WGN.
Second and three after the 7-yard gain. Ortenschlager to the sideline, caught. First down. Woo! What a hit! Denzel Ward! You got barbecue back there? And you didn't invite me? Hurt my feelings!
Please, please.
I love Gus.
Like, isn't it? Like, I need. Oh, man. I want. When I pass away, I need Gus Johnson at my funeral.
What's he going to say?
Whatever. He just want him to read all the whatever it is. He's just awesome.
That hit was in the Ohio State-Maryland game, and it was about as clean and just big-time hit as you can get. And they very delayed called targeting because it was such a big hit. What do you got over there?
That was an alarm going off as I was...
I thought it was like the 1-800 Empire commercial.
No.
You got barbecue back there? You didn't invite me?
Off the cuff. That's
no. He had that one ready.
I think he had that
come
one
on,
ready.
Come on, he had that. You know, he, just come on. No, yeah,
but he's got like 7,000 of
I
them.
I know, but he had that one like ready.
I've never heard him say that before.
Never.
Maybe I missed it.
He's one of my favorites, if not my favorite to listen, especially on those West Coast games.
What do you got coming up on Sports Feed, Jared Payton?
Nothing really, man. Just, you know.
Great tease.
We're going to talk some Cubs, some Bears. You know, it's Mitchell Palooza, man. We'll be talking everything.
You going to walk out 5 minutes in?
No, I'm not going to. I'm there for the whole thing, man. My dad always said, if you start something, you know, you just got to finish it, man.
Before you go, we're going to talk about this coming up after the 5 o'clock news. But the Vice President, Mike Pence, showed up at the Indianapolis Colts home football game today against the San Francisco 49ers and then left because some of the players on the field did take a knee to protest inequality. And the vice president tweeted out, "While everyone is entitled to their opinions, I don't think it's too much to ask NFL players to respect the flag and our national anthem. I stand with President of the United States, Trump. I stand with our soldiers. I will always stand for our flag and our national anthem." And then he left the building. Thoughts?
Well, the obvious thought is that it's incredibly scripted and kind of just a hollow, I don't know if gesture is the right word or not, but they're playing the 49ers. Okay?
That's what I said.
They're playing the 49ers, who have been consistently kneeling for a long time now.
Mm-hmm.
And so he knew. First of all, he's in Las Vegas. He flew all the way to Indianapolis, showed up, knew they were going to kneel. President Trump tweeted out that he asked Mike Pence to do this. And then, they kneel, he tweets this out, they leave, he flies back to L.A., apparently, is where he was going next. So a little bit out of your way, go from Vegas to Indianapolis to show up at a football game just to, you know, prove whatever kind of point they're trying to prove.
49ers and more than 20 players kneeling during the anthem with their hands over their hearts. JP, your thoughts?
I don't know, man. It just, every time that I keep talking about, you know, bringing in politics into my sports and into sports, it's just always rough. And you listen to people, and I see kind of both sides of how, it's kind of how it was always raised, just to kind of see both sides. And the biggest thing is that I don't feel like we're bringing anybody closer together. And that's just the issue that I have. We have to figure out some middle ground here. And I see both sides from people who are upset. But I also don't want it to get away from what the actual protest was about.
Cole,
I feel like that's what we're losing. It wasn't about the flag. It wasn't about our military men and women. That's not why it started. And that's what it's being flipped to. And so that's, you know, It didn't affect me, but I know guys that I went to college with who came from nothing, who've had situations that I didn't have to deal with coming from South Barrington, Illinois, okay? And I learned a lot from being in these locker rooms with guys that didn't come from the same backgrounds that I did, that dealt with a lot of different stuff. So that's why I can understand. And I guess if it doesn't affect you because it hasn't happened to you, then more than likely you probably won't understand. And I think that's where the issue that we're having here is the conversations need to be had, but we also not only need to be able to voice our opinions, but we also have to listen as a nation as well. We have to hear each other.
Right, and I think a great amount of the players in the NFL that are choosing to voice their desires, however you want to put it.
I'll tell you this. This is just one thing I've never said, but I've been in those locker rooms and seen those guys and to be tested as athletes. You know, we're always looking to outdo somebody else. You know what I mean? Because that's the game that we have been able to play. And for, you know, someone to maybe call you out a name, and that just doesn't go well with anybody, any man. It doesn't matter the color of your skin, where you play. You call somebody out of their name and insult them, more than likely they're going to stick to their guns even more.
Well, and a lot of people, I think, view it like, hey, look at how much money you are making and the life you have. Just be happy with where you are. And
that's not it, though. These guys that are doing this, it affects them in a way where they're the voice of where they came from. And so, yeah, they are. And what I want to see is not only that. I want to see, if it comes down to it, everybody needs to do more. It's not just about a protest. We need to do more. If you're going to do something, you need to go, you know, speak to kids in schools and go do, be out on the street. Do these things. I'm in 50 schools a year, 50 schools talking to the kids all around this Chicago area. Like, I'm not just talking about it. I live this of talking to these kids. It's not, and it's about the youth that's growing up. People can't just start, keep talking. We got to like actually do something, have some action. Every one of us. It's not singling out anybody. We need more action.
It's also, in my mind, a disrespect to how hard everyone that's on that field, making whatever decision they're making, worked to get there.
Yeah.
It ain't like they popped out of the womb and all of a sudden they wound up on an NFL field. That is a skill that they've been crafting their whole life 1%. To be on the 1% of the 1% on the stage. And you got to respect that, in my mind. I look up to the athletes because I know – I played everything. I know how hard, it is to get to where they got to.
And just speaking of action, shout out to Jarrett because he was at the Chicago Sports Summit Wednesday with a panel that included Horace Grant, Tim Anderson.
Tim Anderson's story.
I mean, his friend got murdered.
I got chills just thinking about sitting next to him on that stage, you guys. It's powerful. We just need more people doing something and more action.
All right, we'll get to your news in a second. I apologize for being late. The Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago, WGNRadio.com. News in 2 minutes on 720 WGN. Widows!
Chicago Sports, spoken here. The beat is on.
720 WGN and WGNRadio.com.
5:12, happy Sunday. Hope you had a great weekend. Get ready for a beautiful Monday of sports all over this fine city. The Cubs at Wrigley, you got the Hawks, and you've got the Bears and Mitchell Trubisky, and you've got yours truly, Mark Harmon, and Adam Hogue with you till 6 o'clock right now. So that's a dream right there. I
mean, how about the Blackhawks 15-2 so far this season?
Not bad.
That'll work?
Not bad. And kind of fun to beat the Blue Jackets last night, all things considered. No disrespect to Artemi Panarin, but just sort of seeing the fruits of the trade early going here. Brandon Saad looks pretty good back in the old Blackhawk sweater.
I love Saad.
So, all right. Big story today in the world, which crosses over into sports, is the vice president, Mike Pence, going to Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. Thank you. And so he goes to the game, and then he leaves, and his statement is this: I left today's Colts game because President Trump and I will not dignify any event that disrespects our soldiers, our flag, or our national anthem. At a time when so many Americans are inspiring our nation with their courage, resolve, and resilience, now, more than ever, we should rally around our flag and everything that unites us. While everyone is entitled to their own opinions, I don't think it's too much to ask NFL players to respect the flag and our national anthem. I stand with President Trump, I stand with our soldiers, and I will always stand for our flag and national anthem, Vice President Mike Pence.
This is a very divisive issue. I mean, just looking at our text line right now, people get fired up about it. What frustrates me is, you know, he mentioned the word unity in there in his tweet. That was his tweet, right?
Yeah, statement, tweet, whatever.
Yeah. In reality, it very much feels like they're trying to do the opposite. That they're actually trying to divide the country more on this issue. So, I mean, would you agree?
I would, 100%.
So on one side, you have a group that is – what they're protesting is not the flag. They're not protesting the anthem. That needs to stop. They're doing it during the anthem because they're making you think about things. It's supposed to make you uncomfortable. That's what a protest is. Whether you agree or disagree with it, that's just the facts of what's happening.
Add in the word peaceful, too.
Peaceful. Protest. You might not like that it's during the anthem, but that's kind of the point. That's why it is a protest. But they're not protesting the flag. They're not protesting the anthem. And in some cases, we saw this in Arizona 2 weeks ago. We saw it in Baltimore last week. They didn't even do it during the anthem. They didn't do it with the flag present, and the entire stadium booed them. And to that, I ask you the question, what are you booing then in that situation? Because what they're protesting is racial injustice, police brutality. Okay? So you're booing that?
They the people that I talk to who are, or one person that I talk to is extremely offended by this in particular.
By the fact that they're doing it during the anthem.
Right.
Okay.
The defense to the booing in Arizona is that the fans didn't know that they were actually going to stand for the anthem after. And that's when Jerry Jones actually joined his players, which is a whole other thing. That seemed pretty hollow. But he did. So give him credit for, you know, supporting and putting himself sort of in the firing line. These guys want to have a conversation as to whether or not I think the country has done everything it can to have the rights of all its citizenry represented. That's the conversation. And they're using the anthem as a vehicle to garner attention. Now, should they be going into the community with action, a la Colin Kaepernick, who's donated nearly $1 million and has done a ton off the field?
$10 million. He's going for $10 million.
He's
unemployed.
Right. So, should there be more action than just like perhaps being uneducated or not completely knowing what you're doing, and I just want to do this one kneel, and then I'm not going to do anything in my personal life, but yet I feel a passion to do this on the football field? Okay. I think that's a very fair discussion as to what else you're willing to do if you're going to kneel for the anthem. But, you know, at Northwestern yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and Fitz had beautiful language that we played on the show yesterday this week about his discussion with his players and what his role is and what his players should be allowed to do and how he will always stand. But the beauty of this country is that, you know, you are entitled to freedom of speech and having your opinion, and also his role in raising young men. I thought it was fantastic. But, you know, I'm looking at the Northwestern sidelines. All his players are standing. Mm-hmm. There's one person kneeling. It's a white woman. She's in her, I would guess, middle 50s, somewhere around there. She's listening right now, and she's much younger than that. I apologize, but that's my guess. And that was it. There's one person who's a part of the university. Don't know what her role was. I wasn't going to sprint down there and do the Adam Hogue sideline job, but that was it. People are feeling the need, the want, the desire to make this a more unified country all over the place. And for, I just don't get what the point was of the vice president of going to a game and making this statement and then calling out the players for, I guess, lack of unity. Like, it just doesn't...
Right, because that's actually what they're...
It's so backwards.
It is so backwards. I want to know how many people... And there are a lot of people texting in right now angry. I get it. There's a lot of people driving around in their cars right now that are angry. I get it. How many of... If you're one of those people right now, do you even know who Nate Boyer is? Do you know who Nate Boyer is? Nate Boyer is a former U.S. Army Green Beret who was initially offended by Colin Kaepernick choosing to sit during the national anthem. This goes back to a year ago, August, during the preseason of the 2016 season when this all started. Okay? Colin Kaepernick chose to sit during the national anthem. And Nate Boyer, former U.S. Army Green Beret, I believe former football player too, was offended by it. But instead of yelling or texting some text line right now and, you know, calling us idiots right now and
using,
being angry.
Using racial language to the former President Barack Obama. Go ahead.
Yes. He decided to seek out Colin Kaepernick. Take action. Remember what Jared Payton was just saying in the last segment, if you were listening. Actually, take action. Decided to educate, learn about what Colin Kaepernick, and that's the whole thing here. Instead of just getting so angry and not listening, take some time to understand what the conversation actually is about. I mentioned this last week, Carm, when I was just a guest on your show when I was in Wisconsin last weekend.
Guest on your own show, but yeah, go ahead.
And I was driving through Wisconsin on the way to the Packer-Bear game last week, listening to a very fine radio station up there that has plenty of history and well-done journalism. and the host didn't even know what the protests were about. In fact, one of them was asking, "What are they even protesting?" I'm trying not to get angry about this stuff myself, but it made me angry. It doesn't take much effort to learn and understand what this is all about, whether you agree or disagree with it. Just take the time to understand. So back to Nate Boyer, who did that, who went and talked to Colin Kaepernick, and they heard each other's side of how they felt about it. And guess what? They compromised. Nate said, "I totally agree with you in terms of what you're protesting. Racial injustice, police brutality. It's a noble cause." But he didn't like that it was you were sitting during the anthem. He thought it was disrespectful. And he told Colin Kaepernick, "I think it would be less disrespectful if you knelt during the anthem."
And that's what he did.
And that's what Colin did.
Right.
Colin listened to his side of it, and that's the action he took. And that's been the kind of the symbol of this since then, right? Kneeling during the anthem. And it's been painted in a negative light instead of, hey, two sides actually took the time to listen to each other on this issue and come up with some kind of compromise. And now it just seems like everybody's just yelling at each other and not even bothering to take the time to understand what it's about. And that's all I'm asking is you can disagree with it, but at least take the time to understand what this is really about. And I just don't think that the president and the vice president right now are doing that. I think they're just trying to divide this country even more. Whether they believe they're doing that or not, that's what's happening. And they're riling up their side of it. They're very emotional supporters. And it's I can't draw a direct line between all of this and what happened in Las Vegas a week ago, but it just seems like in a very broader sense, there's just so much hate and disrespect in our world right now. And every single day, it was like, Karma, I don't know how you felt this week, but every single day this week, there was something negative that happened. Whether it was starting in Vegas on the absolute worst side of this to, you know, Cam Newton in the middle of the week disrespecting a female reporter with sexist language. And then unfortunately, it turns out the next day that she's got a history of using racial words herself.
And her father.
And I just like, of course. Because that's just how this is these days. No one can just be nice to each other.
Well, and I also do believe that overall, there's just a ton of good out there and people who all want the same thing, which is to, you know, have a roof over their head, have food on the table, and to live the life that they want to live. There should be, for what, you know, we should be able to get to some common ground here. But part of that is respecting each other. And there is just, I mean, the NFL players are just, people don't want to hear it. Stand up. You've been, if you don't like this country, get out. You make millions of dollars. Enough. I'm going to go watch other sports. And, you know, these guys are, at least in my mind, they're trying to make the world a better place. And I don't think they're playing the role of any victim or anything.
I don't know how anyone could have a problem with the message.
People
put the action aside. Put the message. And again, this is
they
like
don't there's just they don't want to hear it around the anthem. Respect the country.
But again, so I go back to Baltimore last week. It wasn't during the anthem. It wasn't the flag wasn't on the field.
People don't
they took the time to not have it be during the anthem, and the entire stadium booed. What are you booing then?
They're booing, clearly, at least in my mind, you have enough. You should be happy where you're at. Don't you see? You can vote. You make money. You live in this country. If you don't like it, get out. I think that's clearly, to me, the message. We'll take some calls coming back here. 720 WGN. 847 texting in. They are booing because they don't agree with the message. Most of the people that are booing don't believe that cops are targeting young black men. They also believe that anyone who's been shot or otherwise harmed or harassed by police are just thugs. They do not see the innocent victims that have been murdered at the hands of the police. There are plenty of people, unfortunately, in my inner circle who do not agree with the overall message. I all that to me is, for the most part, true. Of the people that I talk to who are really offended by it, it's all, I mean, I've heard it all at this point. I've heard it all. And I don't, if I'm the, if you're the NFL, if you're Roger Goodell, what are you doing right now? Because this is, it's not, it could be a win for the league, but right now, I don't think it is.
Well, I don't think it's a loss. By the way, ratings have been up the last 2 weeks. So as much as Trump said that the ratings are going to go down and you're going to, you know, alienate your audience, they're going up.
Yeah, and Thursday night was up 26% from last year. So, I don't think people are going to stop watching football.
No, they're not going to stop.
I mean, that whole thing is...
And for those that say stick to sports, this is now 100% sports story. It's literally the biggest sports league symbol in the world. And
it would be wrong if we didn't talk about it. On the day that the vice president goes to a National Football League game to make a statement in an NFL stadium, it would be wrong. It'd be irresponsible to not bring it up. And by the way, we brought it up for 20 minutes of a three-hour show.
Right. Yeah. And there's also, I mean, it's probably the worst thing we could do is, just base everyone's reactions off of what we're seeing on a text line, because this is usually the least common denominator. Well, there's people. I just spent a whole segment just begging people to listen. Just listen. Just put, for a second, put your anger aside and listen to what people are saying on both sides of it. I have listened to plenty of people make the argument, and I understand that people are very patriotic and love the flag and love the national anthem, and they're offended by it. I get it.
847, I agree with the message, but I didn't go to a protest. I paid good money to see a football game, but I don't want to see the people that I'm paying money to go and see this subject me to their protest. They're just on the sideline. They're not stopping the game. There's no flow of the game. And then they go out and they basically try to kill each other for your own entertainment. That's their choice, and they make a lot of money to do it. But it ain't like they're not playing hard on the field.
A smart text from the 630. They kneel for those of us that do not have a voice and do not have a platform from which anyone will listen. And that's the point.
Yeah. And I think the 214 actually did nail it. Carm, I find you disrespectful to your own show. I watch you on the live stream. Where is the young, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed 42-year-old Carmen who used to respect his own show enough to stand up in the studio at the mic instead of sitting like you are now? Hogue, make that lazy host of yours stand up and salute the mic. I'm getting up. I'm up.
You're going to salute the mic?
I'm saluting you and the mic. Thank you, sir. I'm up. I do like standing during the show. I forgot about that. Gives me more energy.
I think now you should salute the news.
Saluting the news after a quick timeout, 720 WGN. 537, 720 WGN. I'm Mark Carmen. He's Adam Hogue. Thanks for having the show on today, as we've covered a ton of topics. There is this thing tomorrow at Wrigley Field. It's game 3 of the NLDS. The Cubs need to win, or else I'm going to crawl into a hole and be in the fetal position until Thursday at 4:30. Kelly Kroll of Comcast Sportsnet is way more professional than that and handles these things like a pro. And she joins us now on 720 WGN. Kelly, are they okay? Are they mentally ready to go tomorrow? Do you have confidence the ball club will play well?
Wow, Carm, you really ride this roller coaster with them, don't you?
I do.
He's the worst out of anybody.
I do. I can't.
He thought the Nationals were going to sweep 2 days ago. Then yesterday, he thought the Cubs were going to sweep.
I did pick the Nats in 3, and then I was like, "Oh my god! Oh my god! Are we going to sweep the Nats?" And then I handled last night well, Kelly. I watched what happened. I sat there peacefully, calmly, said, "All right, let's go to game 3." But then I didn't sleep particularly well last night. I should have gotten it all out right then. I should have been doing more yelling. But listen, you got a Jose Quintana, right? He's never pitched in the postseason, but he's ready to go. Look good in September, right? Right?
Yeah, let's start with I will go back to your first question and how they're doing, and I will tell you this. You would not have known the difference after game 1 in the clubhouse after the game and game 2 last night after the game. These guys are the same professional demeanor of just another game 164, game 165. I know it sounds so cliche, but it's true. I mean, these guys were not at all concerned. Were they disappointed that they wasted a really great start out of John Lester? Absolutely. But you look at C.J. Edwards and Mike Montgomery stood there like pros and owned up and said, you know what? It was the right pitch. I just didn't execute it. Two of them, each of them leaving a hanging curveball to Bryce Harper, Ryan Zimmerman. As we know, we saw what happened. And that's, you know, that's disappointing. But I tell you what, CJ wanted the ball back in the same scenario, same situation, right that moment, right? I mean, he's a competitor, and they really took it in stride. And I think probably the most telling moment today, and I mean, even Joe Maddon said, you know, they got onto the plane, and they were exactly where he would have wanted them to be from a mood standpoint. And that's kind of, you know, what he loves about this group. But today they have this workout, right? They tell us to be there at 11:15 for clubhouse, and then the guys are going to work out. Well, the workout was 12 to 15 of the guys strolling on to the field in like their flip-flops and Cubs athletic shorts to help themselves to brunch, and the football games that were going on and being shown on the massive video board in left field, and very little batting practice was going on, and they just enjoyed a Sunday morning brunch together. And that's about how worried and how concerned they are right now. I think they feel really good about if they go out there and continue to play the way they've been playing, that they'll be right back in this series. I mean, they did exactly what you want a team to do, right? You go on the road, you want to take one. Sure, they were in position to take two, and that would have been great, but I think they feel pretty good about where they are with two games here at home, Carmen. Yes, Jose Quintana going tomorrow night.
And let's be honest, I mean, what's better than a Sunday brunch? Really, nothing.
They did it up, just like Chicagoans should. I mean, they made it look good today, I'm telling you.
So, to me, this is what has Jose Quintana said? He's kind of an unknown here in this situation because he's been so solid on the South Side for so long, a little up and down once he went to the Cubs, well, really all season, even when he was with the Sox earlier this year. But, you know, we have seen him be able to pitch really, really well and as good as anybody else in the league at times. But no, he just because of the team he's been on for so long, he's never been in anything close to this type of moment. So what is the expectation for Jose Quintana tomorrow?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think that just like you were saying, we know this guy can compete. We know this guy is good. We've seen him at his best. And really what he did in Milwaukee, Joe Maddon was saying today, you know, he feels like he's already in a way experienced a playoff type atmosphere with that three hit shutout up in Milwaukee, where, you know, he basically helped the Cubs separate themselves in the division at that point, which was a very close, stressful series, if you will, up there. And he also mentioned his experience with the World Baseball Classic. I know that that's not playoff baseball, but it is to him, and of course these guys who go home and play for the countries, it means a lot to these guys. So they do, I think, put a lot of pressure on themselves to, you know, perform at their best on that stage, and that'll be the same for Quintana the other night. I had a chance to talk to him today and ask him, you know, the one thing that he mentioned is just your emotions, right? Being overhyped when it's your first time going out there. How do you, you know, how do you control those? I asked, you know, how do you plan on doing that? And he said he actually kind of had talked to John Lackey the last couple games when they were in D.C. And this is funny to me only because we know how well John Lackey can
do right.
His emotion. But I think Lackey is a guy who can talk to him, of course, about the atmosphere and about the energy that you're going to feel and some, you know, some ways of trying to harness that and instead channel it in a positive direction. And I think he mentioned just some of the things that he'll try to do. And I mean, they seem, again, very cliche, you know, just focus on each pitch and be present from one batter to the next and not be overlooking anything. And so, you know, he is a very poised, as you were saying, you know, we've seen him a long time on the South Side and on the North Side. Well, what we've seen is a very poised and composed pitcher up there, even when things aren't going well. So I don't see why that's not the guy we won't see come out tomorrow night. You know, he knows what's at stake. And so long as I think that he can settle in early, and hey, maybe, you know, the Brizzo crew will give him a few runs early on like they have been doing, and then he can really just let himself pitch.
That would be huge if the Cubs can get some runs, obviously. Mm-hmm. Kelly Kroll doing a great job, as always, covering the Cubs for Comcast Sportsnet. One little last one for you, Kelly, quickly. Is Schwarber in the lineup in your mind tomorrow night?
No.
Interesting. Who do you got in left?
I don't know. That's a really great question. I just reading into some of the things Joe was saying today, I really think Tommy La Stella is going to be in the lineup tomorrow.
Wow.
The guy who's 3-for-6 against Max Scherzer, which I know is not a large sample size, but, you know, we know Tommy can, I mean, he can swing a bat and he's been good. You might throw him out there, not in left field, that is, but I mean, he's going to be in the lineup. And so then you're looking at some of the, I think John Jay is going to be in the lineup tomorrow as well. I think he may lead off. So I don't have a good answer for you yet on that. Let me put a pencil or how does Joe say it? The iPad pen to my iPad later and get back to you on that one. I'm
marking it down. Brian in left. I don't see Brian in left. Tommy at third. Jay in center.
Yeah, there you go. No, I don't know how it's going to play out, but I don't see Schwarber in there. Just from some things Joe has said earlier in the week about how I'm trying to remember the exact word he used when talking about Scherzer against righties, but he's just, I mean, he's just so good. So I don't know.
Yeah. Fair enough.
That's not a good answer for you, but I'm just going to stop with I don't see him in there.
It's fair enough. Kelly, great stuff. We're short on time. Thanks so much for jumping on. We appreciate it.
Of course, guys. Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
Kelly Kroll, Comcast Sportsnet, covering the Cubs. We've got a special interview coming up here.
Well, you know, there's a quarterback on the Bears that tomorrow will be facing his first NFL start as a top draft pick at quarterback. And believe it or not, there's another quarterback on the Bears that knows what that's like and has been through that. And is also a really good interview, just as a guy who talks to the media.
What's his name?
Mark Sanchez.
We're going to hear from him next.
I interviewed him this week at House Hall. You'll hear that interview next here on 720 WGM. Back here on 720 WGN, a few more minutes on the beat as we take you to 6 o'clock, Adam Hogue and Mark Carman. So, tomorrow is Mitchapalooza at Soldier Field, of course, after the Cubs beat the Nationals at Wrigley. What a great day tomorrow's going to be. Mm. Mitch Trubisky is making his first start as a number 2 overall draft pick. A lot of pressure in a big city, a big market. There's another Bears quarterback that has been through all this before. Mark Sanchez was drafted by the New York Jets in 2009 with the 5th overall pick in a giant market. A market very similar to this that overreacts and gets all excited about their football. And obviously Mark Sanchez's career has not turned out to be what the Bears are hoping Mitch Trubisky's career is. So this guy can really speak on everything that Mitch is going through and what he's kind of facing here. So I talked to Mark Sanchez this week. It was a great interview. Here's Mark Sanchez and my interview with him Friday at Hal's Hall.
You're really the one guy in this locker room who can kind of speak to going into this thing as a rookie, getting your first start. Now, you had to do it week one at Houston against the Texans, so I just kind of want to, I guess, take you back memory lane and if you can kind of take me through how that process unfolded and really just what you went through.
Yeah, there's obviously a ton of emotion and excitement going into the game, but, you know, the most important thing is your preparation, and that never changed, whether it was college or at this level. Feeling prepared and ready to play was the most important thing. And so Coach Schottenheimer, Coach Kavanaugh did their part in getting me ready. I also had great guys around me in Kellen Clemens and Kevin O'Connell to help me prepare in the room. You know, and we had I got a chance to throw my first touchdown, and most importantly, we got a win. So it was a heck of a week, and we were on the road, and so a lot of excitement building up to it. And you know, managing the emotions and getting back to the most important thing is compartmentalizing the game and the situation and your footwork, good read, complete the ball, and move on.
Now, I looked this up. I think you only had like 30-something passing attempts in the preseason that year. Is that right? And did that? How did that impact you when you know they actually threw you to the wolves in week one?
You know, we're a different, well, similar in that we ran the ball really well with that team, but I want to say we were like, I know we were top 10, I want to say all time NFL in rushing that year. And I want to say it was like 4 or 5, like we could run the rock. Okay. And to the point where that offensive line was so good, it was like the defense knew what was coming and we were still running it. So it was pretty impressive what those guys could do up front. And a back that you guys had here, Thomas Jones,
yeah.
Tony Richardson, our fullback. I mean, that offensive line was unbelievable. So, we didn't have to throw it too much. I think Mitch's ability to scramble is going to be good for him. His ability to get out on the move and make throws is huge. And just to get him in a rhythm, you know, sometimes things don't play out the way you want, and being able to scramble for a couple yards is a positive play, even if it's third and long or something. It's different than giving up a sack or throwing an incompletion. If you can just get back to the line of scrimmage or more, which you can, you know, that whole momentum thing, you don't feel like, man, they're really kicking our butt out here. You know, it's just another play that didn't happen to work out, but it's not some tragedy, you know, and so you punt the ball, no big deal. And so I think he's got to understand that and get into the rhythm of the game, little things, and we'll be helping him the whole way, and he'll be fine.
Realistically, everyone knows that a rookie's going to have ups and downs.
True.
You started 3-0.
Yeah.
You had a win against the Patriots in week two. Then I think you went 1-6, but then finished 5-1. You end up in the AFC Championship game. Yeah. I mean, that's as much of a roller coaster as you can be on. What did you learn through all that as you were going through that, especially in a market like New York?
Yeah, it was, you know, some of the highest of highs and lowest of lows. A market that deals in superlatives a lot like this one. There's no middle of the road. There's no mediocre or just okay or serviceable. It's either best or worst. And that's what you sign up for, playing this game and playing in a place like that or here. So understanding that and keeping that outside, understanding that this is a long year. We've barely been through the first quarter of the season. I think that was one of the toughest things my rookie year is having the stamina to get through the whole dang thing, because you're used to being done around just after Thanksgiving, getting ready for a bowl game and having a week or a couple weeks to just practice amongst yourselves and then go play a bowl game and you're done. This thing's going, man. And so he'll realize it's a marathon, not a sprint. And, you know, just steady in the boat. Stay positive and keep moving forward, keep improving, and try and win.
We had a chance to talk to Dow Loggins yesterday, and I thought he had a really interesting comment when he was asked about the idea of, you know, a quarterback playing too early. And his comment was basically that he doesn't really believe that there's such thing as a bust. Like, if you scout correctly and you draft the right guy,
yeah,
that person is going to be able to weather the storm,
sure,
and get through all that. From your perspective, I mean, is there such a thing as a quarterback playing too soon?
You know, and this is such a blanket answer, but it's so it's all based on timing. The guys around you, I mean, at this position, different than any other sport, this position, you need 10 guys to play really well around you to look good. And, you know, having a veteran team, having a strong run game, having a good defense, having good special teams, all those things just, you know, add to your ability to perform. Now, you know, you have a team that can make up for a couple screw-ups. You have a team that can, you know, bail you out and hold their offense to a field goal when you turn it over in your own territory or something. I mean, that's, you can't substitute for that. I don't care who the quarterback is. As far as playing too soon, I don't know. I mean, there's different theories. There's different schools of thought, I guess. Either you go trial by fire right away, and I think the best way to do that is if you do have that kind of team with good offense around you, defense and special teams, then you let them develop slowly. If you don't, then potentially letting somebody else play and letting them watch for a year, chart a bunch of plays for a year, watch a ton of film, learn from the sideline. So I don't know what's best. I know what I did, and I had a blast doing it. You know, it's hard coming out, especially as a high draft pick, and not playing. That would have been tough psychologically. But then you run the risk of potentially, you know, getting a guy beat up so much that, you know, maybe starts second-guessing a lot of stuff, or maybe feels like this ain't for him kind of thing. You know, I don't know. So
So how about your own situation? I mean, do you ever look back at that and wonder that same question?
If I wouldn't have played?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I was as ready as I was going to be, coming from a system that was similar with the kind of team we had. Like I said, we had great special teams, unbelievable defense, and guys on offense. I mean, we had a strong running game, and then you just kind of manage it, and you get that ability to kind of screw up on the fly and not totally blow it, because, you know, there's a lot of guys around you carrying weight for you. So that was a total blessing. And then, you know, you start to graduate and do a little more as the years go on. But either way, Mitch is going to do fine, and Dal's going to put him in a good position. And, you know, when things don't look so great, then you just got to regroup and keep at it. That's the whole thing. It's not one game, one possession, you know, one drive isn't going to, oh, well, you know, he's this or he's that. And those narratives will be out there, but that shouldn't affect him. And we'll do our best to make sure it doesn't, because he's a good player and he works his butt off, and he's going to get an opportunity to play well.
So very thoughtful answers from Mark Sanchez, the Bears' third-string quarterback right now, who went through this in New York in 2009, Mitch is facing tomorrow.
You can see why he's still on an NFL roster, because that you want that guy around.
Yeah, I mean, he gets it. And I thought, you know, he had some really good insight on Mitchapalooza, if that's what we're calling it, tomorrow night, Soldier Field.
Bang.
We'll be right back here.
Brian Newton coming right up.
So. 720 WGM.